Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Your Book, the podcast for literary nosy parkers. I'm Daisy Buchanan, your host and the author of The Sisterhood, A Love Letter to the Women Who Shaped Me. Also, our very own producer Dale has a brilliant brand new book now available for pre-order. That's Painfully British Haikus by Dale Shaw, published by Michael Joseph and out on November the 14th. It's an extremely funny, poetic exploration of our defining and forgotten national characteristic, grumpy awkwardness. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while and you're looking for ways to support the work, buying our books is the very best way to do that. This week, our guest is the writer, illustrator and feminist sex superstar. Is that a thing? It is now. Flo Perry. Flo is the author of How to Have Feminist Sex, a brilliant new book covering everything from consent to exploring kink and having a happy, shame-free sex life. We went over to hers and talked about art, ABBA, dragons and trying to read 50 Shades when you share a Kindle account with your mum. Just for reference, Flo's mum is Philippa Perry, who was our guest in an earlier series. I'm going to start with Sex at Dawn. Okay. Is this your book?
Yeah, that's my
excellent
book.
Excellent. So, this is by...
Are we recording? Is this all happening?
Okay. So, we have pushing you, sorry. Christopher Ryan and Casilda Jitta. How We Mate, Why We Stray, and What It Means for Modern Relationships. This looks great. So when did you read this?
I read that for research for my own book, How to Have Feminist Sex. It's like one of the Bibles of sex, really. And it's all about being non-monogamous.
I've just opened it up at a page that says, sometimes a penis is just a penis. And then... there's a quote from Michel Montaigne. It's like, on the penis, his presumably. So was there anything in this book that surprised you? Was there anything that you didn't know?
Yeah, like absolutely loads. I didn't know any of it. It's real scientific study. It's about how in the past, in like prehistory, we probably weren't monogamous and how monogamy is a relatively modern concept. And about like, it's a lot of studies of... tribal cultures and how they're not monogamous and how like marriage isn't this thing that is integral to human life that some people believe it to be, basically.
So do you think that we're moving away from monogamy, having rushed towards it? Do you think this is a post-monogamous time?
I think that it's an option on the table for people now in a way that it didn't used to be. And I think it's a useful thing. Like someone nowadays maybe thinks like, okay, am I straight? You can also say, okay, do I want to be monogamous? Is this a lifestyle for me that I want to do right now? And rather than like have a boyfriend or not have a boyfriend, it's good to know there are like lots of in-betweeny stages.
Yeah.
And you can have more than one boyfriend, or you can have a boyfriend and a girlfriend. And these are all options and lifestyles that work for people. And I think that's a good thing to have in mind, whether that's for you or not.
I mean, what I really loved about your book was at its core, this sort of idea, like ultimately there really are no rules. And there are so many things we assume. And even in the way we phrase those questions, kind of, are you this, are we that? That it's just about that, you know, dissolving this idea that we have to think about everything in a binary way.
Yeah, totally. I just wanted to like give people choice. I wanted to give people more options to what their sex life should look like other than like the Cinderella fairy tale.
So was it something that you wrote because you're like, well, this is what I want to read and I want it to exist?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's like, I'm really interested in sex. I think it's like the most fun thing to talk about. And so obviously I liked having every day writing about it. That was fun. It was,
love your job.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was a dream come true to get that, to get the book deal and do the work. And I hope that other people learn as much as I did writing it, really.
Can you remember the first book where you encountered sex and sort of had a strong reaction to it?
I remember reading Sugar Rush on...
Oh, is that Julie Burchell?
Yeah, on holiday with my parents when I was like 14 and thinking like, wow, this is not appropriate for poolside. I mean, it's really not that spicy, but I can definitely... That was like also like one of the first pieces of like gay media that I consumed. And yeah, that was definitely enjoyable.
How did that come into your hands and life? Did you know much about it going in, or did you think, oh, this is kind of a, this looks like a fun read about teens? And then
I actually can't remember. I'm pretty sure someone bought it for me. It might have even been my mum. But like, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't like out or anything, so it was, if she did buy it for me, it was pretty, I don't know, perceptive.
If you don't mind me asking, what was that like to kind of, to meet? If that, was that like one of the first sort of queer characters that you met in a book? Did you feel seen? Was it exciting? Was it scary? Had you, was there other kind of like queer literature that you'd encountered before?
There's definitely, I don't think I'd ever read a gay book before. Yeah, it was fun and exciting and scandalous. And like, I remember being very into the book. So yeah, it was great.
I remember reading the Tales of the City books when I was a teenager and just finding one and being absolutely hooked. And it was really just that being, I'd never met those characters before and I fell in love with all of them. And it was such a sort of, you know, it was like so many love stories and realise, and again, it's, I think, as you know, what you were saying about that it's not, you know, this person with this person. It was almost sort of like polyphonic, the love and the connection and the way the sort of unions are, arise and then are dissolved, but being giddy with that world. And San Francisco as well. I see loads of travel books here. We have Costa Rica, Mexico, the world Traveler's Guide to the Planet.
But yeah, I've been to both Costa Rica and Mexico are mine.
And you've been to both of them?
I've been to both of them.
When did you go?
I went to Costa Rica about 4 years ago and Mexico last year.
Oh, so how long were you there for?
Both just like a holiday amount of time, like 2 weeks. I don't really do traveling. I just do holidays.
Sometimes I think traveling's not very relaxing. Like you get there and then you have to go somewhere again. You're like, no, I've just got here.
I don't do anything that involves a large backpack.
Would you ever do any travel writing or think about writing something set in a particular place? Or are there any books set in places that you've really responded to?
I mean, I would do travel writing if someone gave me a free holiday. I swear that every single person would.
If anyone is listening to this,
yeah, exactly.
I think, you know, PRs, come on. Yes, I think sometimes you have to ask the universe and it'll provide.
But like writing-wise, I can't imagine writing something that wasn't set in London, really. Just because I am like, I've lived in London for like 95% of my life and feel extremely London. And don't really know what it's like to live anywhere else.
Which writers do you think kind of nail London? Are there any books you've read where you've just really felt and kind of recognised the London that you live in?
I really like J.K. Rowling's descriptions of London in her Robert Galbraith novels. And she talks a lot about places that I know. And it's always fun when you're reading a book and you recognise places. I've also read, like, this is like, I mean, I don't believe in, like, trashy writing or whatever. I believe that all culture is equal. I read all of the Rivers of London series.
Oh, I don't know that series.
It's, like, about a zombie policeman set in London.
That sounds amazing.
So the policeman isn't a zombie. He looks for zombies.
Is it a dystopian future?
No, so it's very much set now. But, yeah, he also writes brilliantly about London. I mean, the book, yeah, you know, there's some other pitfalls for them, but I read all of them, so I must have enjoyed them.
Do you find that when you're in a book, you're in it, are you a compulsive reader?
I'm very much a reader for joy, and I have no problem with abandoning a book either. I think I did a science degree, which is unusual in this world, and I actually am grateful for that for not many things, but for one thing is that I don't think I ever got that thing of guilt. I never got that feeling that, oh, I should be reading something else. Reading should be improving me. I always read for fun. So I have like a Kindle library full of like absolute murder mystery trash.
Oh, can we see your Kindle? Yes. You get it handy. I love as well how, because I've not got a Kindle. I've got a Kindle app on my phone, which is terrible, but I've used it. But I love how compact they are.
I'm an absolute convert.
So portable. And great when you go travelling.
This is half of this is my mum's because we share.
Oh, so can you see kind of how far along she is? Do you have similar reading taste?
Yeah, quite similar. She reads way more than I do. That was fun.
Oh, so that's My Sister the Serial Killer.
Yeah.
I can't read the author's name, but I know that book's huge. It's been ever. It was a Bailey's Prize nomination, wasn't it? Is that
It's very short.
Oh, is it short?
It's really short. You can read it in like 2 days.
Oh,
love a short book.
I love
book.
A quick read.
So that's quite fun. Well, I absolutely am a huge Sally Rooney fan, everyone else.
So you've read Normal People.
I've read both of them.
And what did you prefer?
I preferred Normal People.
Rather than Conversations with Friends. Which one did you read first?
Normal People. I was really, really looking forward to Conversations with Friends because I read Normal People and loved it so much. And I was like saved it for a holiday and everything. But for me, I didn't love the characters. That's the thing, like, for novels that I really need to be able to do. I need to like, and for TV as well, like the characters. If they're like not someone I don't want to be friends with, then I'm not that, I don't care enough.
You're spending so much time with them, aren't you? It's a real relationship.
Yeah.
Did you like Sarah Pascoe's book?
Yeah, I really like
Sarah Pascoe. I love Sarah Pascoe.
Yeah, like, I think she's great.
That's Animals, the latest one. Is
no,
it?
That's
oh,
the
no,
first
that's the first
one. I haven't
one.
Read her second one yet.
So as a scientist, what did you think of Animal? Was that, did that fit with your kind of, your inquiring mind?
I actually read Animal and then I read Sex at Dawn because basically Sex at Dawn inspired Sarah to write Animal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Animal is like a book probably that covers... There's not many books that cover the topics that my book cover, and Animal is one of them that, like, does overlap quite a lot. And I thought she did a brilliant job of kind of weaving in these quite feminist theories about being sex positive and also telling her own story in such, like, an open, frank and funny way.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because on the one hand, I do think that there's a real expectation on women that men don't have so much, where it's like you have to offer up bits of you for public consumption. But on the other... More than anything else, I love personal writing, memoirs and stories. I love stories from people's lives. I love, again, it's that what you were saying about enjoying being with someone and getting to know them. And especially when that person is a comedian and a brilliant storyteller. You know, I'm such a fan of Sarah Pascoe. I want to know all about you in a way that's probably borderline creepy.
Yeah, I think that personal stories, I think it is true that women get asked to exploit their own personal experiences more than men. But at the same time, I think nothing actually persuades an audience more than personal stories.
Yeah.
And nothing entertains more.
I do feel as though among women, you know, when the chorus of voices comes together, I think we all sort of really draw strength from each other when, you know, that sort of, that happened to me also.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's very important to see your story reflected in the media, basically.
Something you said in the Sunday Times magazine interview that really, really, really made me laugh about having parents who are very sort of, I suppose, open about their lives, but mainly, you know, they're not afraid to sort of shy away from all kinds of subjects, but you said, you know, I like thinking about my parents having sex about as much as anyone else, which...
Yeah, I don't like doing it at all.
Like, no, of course, there's no matter how sort of easygoing and open and sex positive anyone, there's still...
Basic human boundaries,
yes.
Yeah. What else? I've read all of the Superpowered's books.
Oh, I don't know those. Tell me about those. Superpowers.
So they are... It was originally... This is like absolute peak, like my taste trashiness. No offence to the guy who wrote Superpowers. I think you're a genius. They're so long. They're a web series originally. And you know how Kindle tells you how many hours each book takes? And most books take about 6 hours. Each one of his books takes 24 hours to read.
Wow.
And I've read 4 of them. So it's 4 whole days of my life I've had in this universe. It took me 4 months of, like, complete solid reading. And it's about, like, a superhero university, and I absolutely got completely addicted to it, and I loved it.
Amazing. Well, as you say, I think the fact that you have spent that much time with that guy, that is a testament to his genius, that you would have not, you know, kept going if you were not fully engaged. I've not read The Mars Room. Did you read that?
I really like that. Yeah, I really like The Mars Room.
I don't really know what it's about. I just know that it's supposed to be... Was that... That was on the... That Booker shortlist or...
Yeah, last year I looked at the Booker shortlist and read everything that kind of caught my eye. And yeah, the My Marsden was actually the favourite of the things I read. It was basically just one woman's story of how she ended up in prison. And like, kind of... And then it kind of flashed back to how she got there and then her current life in prison. It was like flashing back and forward. But yeah, it was... I thought it was really great.
Do you ever reread anything or do you...
Absolutely never. I'm like, I've never reread a book. And I also am really guilty of forgetting absolutely everything I've read.
I do think, though, that sometimes all you can really remember is the way you felt when you were reading it. It's really... Because it's a lot of information, especially when you've got books that are 24 hours of reading time.
The only thing I actually have reread is The Essential Dykes to Watch Out For by Alison Bechdel, who is, like, my absolute idol.
Oh, The Essential Dykes to Watch Out For by Alison Bechdel.
If I... I went on Desert Island Discs. This would be like my essential book. I think I absolutely love it. I think it's both hilarious and a reflection of a culture that doesn't get reflected very much in the media. And like as a queer woman, I think it's nice to see our in jokes in print.
Do you have a favourite page or story in here?
No, it's all like, it's like continuous narrative, all of it. So it's like, even though it's like done page by page by page in like a weekly, that could be like in a weekly magazine, there's like the stories weaving in and out. I can't like remember specific ones.
Is that because, I mean, another thing that I really loved about your book is it does sort of have that kind of a factual book, but it's got a real kind of graphic novel feel. Would you, or have you been writing sort of fiction that's got...
It's a dream of mine to write a graphic novel, and I will do it one day. I'm a huge fan of them. I love how you can say things without, not in words, basically, through a graphic novel.
Because I was just thinking about, like, the economy of it. You know, you can't, like, describe a tree for 3 pages. You've really got to get to the point.
No, but you can just draw it. So it's like, it's
what do you
easier.
Mean? You know, the leaves are rustling in the gentle winter. Like, it's a tree! You can see the tree! Which other graphic novels do you love?
I'm a huge Posy Simmons fan.
Oh, is that Tamara Drew?
Yeah, and stuff like that. I don't have much of them here because most of them are my mum's that like I borrowed growing up. But I really love... She writes about London brilliantly and kind of captures English middle-classness and like writes about her own... Both what they have in common, both Alison Bechdel and Posy Simmons, I think is they write about their own world, but they laugh at it. And that's something that I would love to recreate and I think is... It's laughing at yourself is basically like the funniest and nicest thing you can do, I think, and invite other people to laugh at it. You with like yourself with it's just nice. It's like inclusive.
It's Nora Ephron, isn't it? It's having that control over the joke, and when you know funny things happen and you present them, it's like it's life is handing you a story, and so you've got control over how that's perceived, and you can kind of. Because I think, as well, you know, you're never, if you're laughing at yourself, you're never punching down, are you?
Yeah,
as long as you are doing it from a place of security.
Yeah, and I think Posy Simmons loves living in middle-class Islington, and I think Alison Bechdel loves being a dyke, and you get that sense both from both of them, but at the same time, they're taking the piss out of their worlds, and I just love it.
So did you discover graphic novels from reading your mum's, and was it... Posy Simmons, who was sort of the first, or were you always kind of intrigued by like, cartoons and?
I grew up reading Asterix and Obelix, and then Posy Simmons, and then I remember reading like Mouse when I was like 14, and then I've always bought and read graphic novels where I can.
Cool. I'm gonna see what else I can find on the shelf.
Yeah.
Have you read the book you wish your parents had read?
Yes, yeah, I have. Yeah.
And did you read it kind of as it was being written, or did you wait until?
No, I read it an early draft.
How much influence did you have over it?
I'm the baby. Obviously, I had the most influence of anyone ever. 27 years of influence.
So many people have responded to that. And I think it's interesting that we think about parenting, and there's so much conversation about parenting, and it's sort of fetishised and idealised and how it's done. No one really talks about how to be an adult child. And I think that book... It's really interesting on that subject that you've got to kind of have a relationship with the people who sort of who brought you into the world. Comes up so rarely in novels, but I think it's such a rich area. Have you read Trick Mirror?
I'm halfway through it. Ooh. I'm not going to say I've officially abandoned it yet.
I'm sort of desperate to read this, and it's one of those things that's kind of not been in my pile.
Did you read the essay that was published in The Guardian?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I read the essay and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I must read that book. And some of the other essays are good. She has a really fun one about the relationship between taking ecstasy and religious experience, which was fun.
I have a theory about with ayahuasca and how it, you know, transforms. Have you ever? Or the, you know, the...
I've never taken ayahuasca, no.
Well, neither have I, but I have had really bad food poisoning. And after that, I've been like, I can understand why you feel as though, like, your life is going to be different from now on. This has been a transformative experience. I think I don't need to go to the rainforest. I can just...
I think if everyone tells you that something should feel a certain way, then maybe you feel like it. That's the reason why.
I suppose that comes back to ecstasy and religion.
Yes, totally.
Ecstasy with this big and a small E.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We'll be back to flow soon, but now it's time for my steal of the week. A book so hot that you don't know whether to get it from a bookshop or to find someone in a pub selling semi-legal copies out from under their coat. Just for reference, always try the bookshops first. This week, it's former guest and friend of the show, Stuart Heritage, with Bedtime Stories for Worried Liberals. Snuggle up with stories like Jack and the sustainably produced meat substitute stalk, Centrist Dad in Wonderland, and My Fair Sex Doll. It's equal parts smart and silly, it's extremely funny, and it is a must-read for everyone who has ever fought back tears while listening to the Today programme. That's Bedtime Stories for Worried Liberals by Stuart Heritage, published by Profile Books and out now. Now, back to Flo. That is British Wildlife, is that you?
That's me, yeah.
Let's get that one out. Also, the photographs here are beautiful.
Yeah, I bought this in the beginning of my bird watching journey, and it's actually much better to get one with drawings in because it's much easier to identify something from a drawing than a picture.
So tell me about the bird watching. How long have you been doing that?
Actually, it's my story with bird watching is basically a love story between me and my housemate. We were like kind of periphery friends for a while, but then basically he's really into bird watching, and he's like this beautiful camp gay man who's like very East London and cool, but also knows literally every single thing about birds in England that is imaginable. Which I found fascinating. So I was like, I want to go to like Walthamstow Wetlands with you, take me. And then he'd take me, and then he told me all about gooses and gooses? Geese. And ducks, and
I
really
heard that,
going,
and I'm like, gooses? what is gooses?
But then we also talked about our respective failing relationships at the time. And then basically both had major breakups within like a month of each other and moved in together. I still love him, I still love birds, and now we live in the treetops, And he points out all the different little birds that we see in the treetops of our balcony together.
That is so lovely. I mean, that is a heck of, that's a novel right there. Sorry, that whole experience. Do you still go to Walthamstow instead of going to London and look for the birds?
Yeah, I went to Walthamstow Wetlands and saw a peregrine falcon the other day.
Oh my God, you didn't?
I did. It was absolutely amazing. I was like, I was with my girlfriend and we were looking up in the sky and we were like, what, is that a crow or is that one of the falcons? Because I've like heard that they're there, but I've never seen one. We were like, is it a crow? Is it a falcon? And then just went like, and like did the big like super fast dive that they did. It like crosses all the sky you can see in like 10 seconds. I was like, yeah, it's a falcon. Absolutely amazing.
That is awesome. Did you read like H is for Hawk or
no,
any
I've never
sort of
read
nature?
Any kind of nature-y book. But I watch loads of nature-y TV. Big Blue Planet fan. Sort of, big Spring Watch fan.
Ah, oh, Spring Watch, yes. Because whenever they go, you sort of think, oh, it would be really fun to be there with Chris and Michaela. You know, in a little
tent. I love
tent.
Chris. I love him so much. If they never need a third person, I'd pop for Spring Watch.
He is punk Attenborough, isn't he, I think?
I think he's the best. I really, really like him. I'd read his book. Maybe I should do that. I'll put it on my to-read list.
What is his book? Is it here?
I think it's like a memoir-y, nature memoir. No, I don't have it. I want to read it. That's what I'm going to read next.
There's your nature book. Is there any more in the Kindle?
Yeah, sure.
I love that we can sit down. Sometimes it's nice.
Yeah, so I read Snap from the Booker shortlist just because I was amazed there was a murder mystery on it, so I read that. Oh, that's another murder mystery.
Oh, so
this
you've got
is
a
my
few
Rivers
of
London.
Aronovic. Ah, that's the. So we've got Whispers Underground, Moon Over Soho, and Rivers of London. So this is the zombie policeman.
Basically, yeah. And then I got really into reading about Mormon killers for a while.
Oh, like true crime? Or?
Yeah, I got into true crime.
Where are the? Tell me about the Mormon killers. That's it.
I read.
Do
like
those
a
things go together?
Page book about all the times that like murder in Mormonism. It was long. What did I read? I read one true crime novel that I really liked and I got sucked. I can't remember what it is now. It must be on here somewhere.
Is there something about Mormonism where sort of sociologically?
Just quite interested in basically weird religions and cults, of which Mormonism is basically one.
Oh, did you read The Circle?
Oh, I absolutely loved The Circle.
That's a really kind of immersive, but I remember kind of picking it up. In fact, I think I was killing time in Waterstones, a Canary Wharf, waiting for producer Dale. So looked up, it was about 50 pages in, thought I should probably buy this.
Yeah, as someone who's worked in one of those companies, it was really funny. It was very much like, yep, recognise this, yeah, recognise this. The like cool CEO who wears the hoodie, who's like actually just like all the other CEOs underneath it was...
And that, you know, we have all this fabulous entertainment for you and snacks and provisions and it's a campus, but you can never leave.
Yeah, 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 exactly that. Like, oh, wow, you get free lunch and that just means you don't get a lunch break. It all really rung a bell. No, I loved working at BuzzFeed, but there was definitely... When I read The Circle, I, like, texted all of my BuzzFeed friends, like, have you read this? You have to read this right away.
I did. I had a pal who worked at Twitter and I think I saw under, you know, pretexts of it being a work thing. It was not a work thing. I went there for lunch and I was like,
oh my God, it's so
pouring
nice.
Naked I've been to bars in my bag.
Yeah, it's like, they had Mint Aeros, which is my favourite chocolate bar at Twitter.
Oh, it reminded me of Broad City with Alana pumping the Kiehl's moisturiser into a carrier bag when she's at the gym. Is there anything that either your mum has said, oh my God, you have to read this, you'll love it, and you'd be like, no, thank you, or vice versa, where you've recommended something? If you've
yeah,
just
we
not
do.
Got it.
Our tastes overlap. I mean, obviously, we share a Kindle library. We both like murder mysteries, but I tend to go for slightly more plotty, fantasy things, and she tends to go slightly more, like, relationship-y than I do.
So what was the last thing that you thought she'd love that she didn't love? Or do you just kind of... Are you quite gentle with each other in terms of recommending things?
I recommended The Mars Room to her, and she was like, nah. She doesn't really like anything that's set in a world that she hasn't experienced.
Like no dystopias.
No dystopias. Like, no... She can... Like, murder mystery in Sweden, she can just about manage. And, like, she loves, like, period drama.
I can imagine olden days in Sweden. Yeah. That's as far as it goes. I've seen a few cookery books now. There's Ruby Tando. I loved her book. Eat?
Eat Up.
I've really liked it because... She was just so sensible about it's not just saying, oh, just have all the Mars bars, but also it was just a real, real appreciation of food. She talks about Nigel Slater and about how much she loves him. And I think it's that kind of a real, you know, relish of things. She's really good on how things can nourish you in a broccoli way or things can nourish you in a flake way.
Yeah, I love that attitude towards food. And I totally share that.
I've seen a few books here. There's the Ultimate Student Cookbook, £1 Meals. Do you cook much? Is that something that you like doing? Or
yeah, I cook most days. The £1 Meal one is mine. That's one of those books I bought off Instagram in the middle of the night and I've never made anything from. I was like, wow, this looks great. But actually, I'm not a very recipe person. I tend to just cook from like whatever is still in the fridge. But I have cooked some things from Flavour Ruby Tando.
Ah, so that's the one in here.
I did buy it after I got the Kindle sample.
Oh, so it's the real one is on the shelf. What did you cook? Can you really, do you have any favourites?
She does a really nice Ghanaian curry. I haven't made in ages, actually, but that's really nice.
I suppose it's quite a wintry, autumnal dish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's basically like a curry full of peanut butter, which
Ooh.
I really like the idea of. And really, it's really tasty. And she makes a really great chocolate and like salted pretzel pie.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It's basically like a pretzel-y Snickers.
I have often thought in the entirely unlikely event that anybody wanted me to write a cookbook, which will never happen, it would be like 1,001 things to do with peanut butter.
Yeah, I love peanut butter, sweet and savoury.
Oh, Shrill! Lindy West, did you read that?
I loved Shrill, yeah, I absolutely loved it.
Because that she's another, I suppose, a little bit like Gia Tolentino. So much of that was sort of, you know, online and... It's interesting, I think, the way that reading like a very widely shared article feels like a very different experience from reading something in a book and being with that person's voice for that long.
It's true. I absolutely love Shrill and like I would highly recommend it, but I did think I got maybe 60% of Shrill from listening to the This American Life podcast episode based on it, which is why I bought Shrill. But also like that podcast episode is the real piece of art that's amazing, maybe.
I think I had the same experience. And it was a bit like, I was just talking about To Kill a Mockingbird. They were talking about how they didn't read To Kill a Mockingbird when, you know, they were sort of an angsty teenager. But they read it when Ghost at a Watchman came out. Mm. And because they loved To Kill a Mockingbird so much, they were really delighted to have like another go back into that world. Yeah. It's almost like kind of behind the scenes documentary. And... You know, I think that's the trouble, isn't it? When you get the gist of something and then, you know, you sort of, you get the extras, you know, how many extras do I really need or want here?
Yeah, it's true. When to stop is a tricky thing.
So much here. It's like 41 pages of books.
Yeah, I've had a Kindle for ages. Like I used to have one with the ones with the like button.
Ah, the... I see Mr. Loverman by Bernadine Evaristo, the Booker winner, who, and actually it was your mum who gave me the proof of Girl, Woman, Other. And I was going around saying, this is the best book I've read all year. And it won, which I've never called anything before. So
I want to read that actually, because my mum keeps going on about how it really was the best.
I thought that, and the thing I keep coming back to is there's a trans character, and at a time when the conversation around that is so angry and shouty and polarizing, I felt as a cis woman, it was like just one of the most sort of nuanced and sort of gently explorative, is that a word, explorative, exploring? I felt as though it was really kind of openly and generously and sensitively handled. And because the character is sort of, part of it is them discovering how they feel about gender and it not being something they kind of identify with. But while they're working out who they really are and who they feel like, they're sort of online getting guidance in sort of chat rooms and making all the mistakes. And they've got someone saying like, no, you can't talk in the gender binary. And then they're sort of, you know, it's a real, I think, sort of celebration of learning and discovery.
I really want to read that. I want to read that like now. I think there's like, it's the best way to... It's a really good way to understand someone is to read a good character. It's a great way to understand a minority that you're not part of is to read a book where one of the characters is part of that minority.
It's so skillful the way she weaves them together and everyone's story is interlinked and it makes you kind of care so much about them. But I think a lesser writer would have just really gone for that gimmick, like, oh, look how all the coincidences. But the women are just, and the people are so fully, fully realised.
Yeah.
And even down to there's a racist character, but she sort of ends up being someone that you can sort of understand and sympathise with and kind of coming good, but not in a like a Disney like, and she's stop being racist and it's fine. It's just really thoughtful
that
and kind
brilliant.
Of optimistic and hopeful, and such a pacey writer as well. I think if I hadn't picked it up, I might be like, oh, this looks like it might be a bit intense and complicated, but I was just kind of, you know, head down, couldn't stop.
Brilliant. I'll definitely read that.
Well, this is, I went through a non-fiction, your non-fiction phase. Your self-confident
I
baby is
name.
Not mine.
That's the best book name I've ever heard. It looks like a sort of...
That's definitely my mum's.
I don't know. That looks like a meme.
Self-confident baby.
Oh, what was 438 days?
That actually, that is something intense. That I recommended to my mum and she loved. I never hear anyone talk about this book, but it's about... But we both absolutely loved it. It's about... It's a true story of the guy who spent the longest adrift at sea solo by accident ever. And it is 438 days. He was a fisherman who got caught in a big storm. The power in his boat went out. He got pushed out to sea. And he went from Mexico all the way across the Pacific Ocean and landed in, like, one of the islands off Australia 438 days later. And it's about how he survived and his journey.
So was he completely by himself that whole time?
He had a mate... For spoilers, he had a mate for like the first 3 weeks, but the mate couldn't hack it and died.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
How did he stay sane? Did he?
He kind of did, yeah. It's basically, yeah, about how he stayed sane. And he's like, this man has just such a strong survival instinct. And it also gives you a backstory in his life before. And he's just like a very quite ordinary fisherman, but with like, you know, the same kind of troubles of divorce and relationships and family arguments that like anyone has, but yeah, he was just had like just enough skills to survive and was quite good at putting up with suffering.
Do you feel like you learned anything about resilience?
I feel like now I know how to catch and eat a seagull.
Wow.
Because basically that's all he did.
That on the one hand, you love the birds, you love nature, you love admiring the majesty. On the other hand, you'd eat them if you had to.
Yeah, definitely eat a seagull. I mean, if I had to, I'd eat chickens every day.
Escape from Camp, a similar sort of...
Escape from Camp 14, that's like a North Korea biography. So that's obviously incredibly depressing. Wild, everyone's read that.
I do love Cheryl Strayed, actually. She's someone that I was quite sneery about and then came to you later and thought, oh, yes, everybody was right about her and I was wrong.
Yeah.
I think that sort of, you don't know my feelings, Cheryl Strayed. You don't know my emotions. No, you do actually, don't you? Do you read like Agony Aunt pages or, you know, things like sort of Dear Sugar and...
I am a huge fan of Dan Savage.
He's a genius.
Yeah, I'm a big listener of the Savage Love cast. I basically listened to his book while drawing my book all of the time because it's like relevant. And yeah, I feel like I've listened to hundreds and hundreds of his problems and answers. But yeah, he just gives, I think, the best advice on sex. And even when he doesn't give the best advice, he's really good at learning and like his listeners ring in and like he has such a big listenership that they're like, no, you're wrong. And he's like, maybe I was wrong. And I think that's also a great message for us all to...
Yes.
In this cancel culture, I think it's good to have, basically know that people can learn and that people can make mistakes and it doesn't make someone a bad person if they make one mistake or do one thing you disagree with.
It's so true that now, and it's, I think it really kills creativity, doesn't it? If everyone's just going to be terrified, they're going to kind of mess up all the time. They'll just be nothing.
Yeah, I am terrified of getting cancelled. Now I've written a book with like feminist on big letters in the front. I'm like, oh my God, shit. I'm like, every time I'm like, you know, am I going to get cancelled for shaving my legs? Like, what? You know, there's like so many things to be cancelled for now.
I had like nightmares that something weird would have happened and like the printing and proofing and like there might be a big page in the middle of mine that says like I hate the French and I just missed it.
Totally, yeah.
I don't hate the French. I think they're great. Great bunch of lads.
A Girl on the Train I absolutely loved.
Did you read that when the hype was at its strongest? Or
yeah,
did you...
probably. I always read books when the hype is the strongest. I'm a big...
So
I just...
were your expectations high or were you...
Well, no, because I've read... I would estimate I've read 20 books that started The Girl. Yeah, of varying quality. or had like girl in the title in some kind of murdered situation. And that's probably the best one of them all, of that particular niche.
Well, you know, it did all right, didn't it? I think it was quite popular, The Girl in the Train.
Yeah. None of these are mine. Joe Nesbo's are probably all mine, but I honestly cannot remember. All of the Game of Thrones is mine.
Do you read the books and watch the series, or do you focus on the books?
I read the books first. I have watched the series, but I much prefer the books. I mean, it's just a year of my life, though, isn't it? Like, it took me, if The Superpowers took me 4 months, Game of Thrones took me a year to read. It's like, well, it's a year of the other books I could have read. Didn't need to watch and read it. Like, maybe I should have diversified my culture slightly more.
Has he finished them? Or are we waiting for his last one?
I think there's maybe even two more. But I don't think I will be reading them. I can't be in that world anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what happened when you read the last one?
Well, I read them all back to back and I was like, yes, brilliant, love it, more. And now I'm like, no.
A bit like quitting sugar.
Well, I've never done that, I would not know.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example of like, or the opposite of that, I suppose.
I'm a big person for phases, though.
Frenzy.
I love a phase hobby.
Ooh, what do you think your next phase is going
to
be?
Ooh, great question. I'm really trying to get back into knitting, but it's not working. I don't know. It's hard to predict what my next... Bird watching was definitely a small phase of mine. I keep these things in my life. I can still knit. I can still do watercolours. I can still... But yeah, I definitely go through like periods of...
Are these your watercolours here?
This is my painting. This is the only one I did here. My other housemate didn't come on a weekend away, we did. And we all painted a picture of him. As some, like, extremely wholesome prank. All of these weird portraits.
So did you just leave them around for him to find?
We actually hung them all in his room originally.
Gosh, there's such a mix here. Michael Frayn, Tana French. Very glam picture of them.
Gone Girl, that's another girl murder book I've read.
Did you like The Girl on the Train more or less than Gone Girl?
More. I like Girl on the Train better. The Marriage Plot, I also abandoned that. I loved his other one.
I love The Virgin Suicide.
I loved The Virgin Suicide and the other one, Middlesex. I always get Middlesex confused by it with another book.
Middlemarch?
With Middlemarch. Whenever people are like, I'm reading Middlemarch, it's terrible. I'm like, I read that, I loved it. But no, I loved Middlesex. Middlesex and The Virgin Suicide I absolutely loved. I think they were both pre-Kindle. Lost them in many house moves, but The Marriage Plot was a bit tricky for me.
Oh, did you read Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
Yes, I did. I absolutely loved it. I loved that book. But yeah, I really like the way it's done with narrative, email, text. It's kind of like mixed media, I want to say, from an art point of view, but in like book form, and I really enjoyed that. The way you get like lots of different ways of telling the story.
And I loved those emails. You know, with the personal assistant, you know something's going awry. And a lot of the back and forth, some of it is quite boring, or rather, not, but the details are very dry in places, but it's still...
It's like search through for the plot. But it's still very, patience with books. So it was definitely like gripping enough to keep my interest.
Ooh, 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
I've read, that's another book I gave up on, this real theme.
So what was the scene? Do you remember the bit of 50 Shades where you're like, right, no, I'm done.
Well, I'll be able to click on it and it will, and I have to download
Unless your mum's been reading it.
Unless my mum's been secretly reading it. Will it will remember where I am? I don't know. No, it starts from the beginning, unfortunately.
Oh.
Because it's from
they're all there.
Kindle that wasn't this one.
So have you sort of successfully erased it from your mind?
Yeah, basically.
I feel like... Anyone writing a book about sex, you sort of have to read 50 Shades just to know what not to do.
Yeah, you should at least have... I don't know what not to do. I don't want to be like... I feel like E.L. James obviously tapped into like a lot of female sexuality that wasn't tapped into before. There's a reason she was so popular. That's something I really believe, like... I think any culture that is popular, you can't ignore.
Yeah,
anything that's been really popular has something you can learn from. And even though 50 Shades of Grey wasn't for me personally, for a lot of women, I think it's the first thing they ever really read, where like, yeah, it is the female gaze. Even though it's like
kind of sexist and like paints quite a bad picture of BDSM practices. It's a female focused fantasy. It's a fantasy that a lot of women have.
I think about that a lot, that, ooh, this is problematic. And yet millions and millions and millions of people responded to it in some way. And how, again, I suppose what you're saying about cancel culture, I guess, that you can't learn anything interesting if you just shut things down.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think the interesting thing to learn about 50 Shades of Grey is that there is demand for basically things for women to masturbate to. And you can make money out of it.
That's what we like.
Yeah. not that my book is very porny. Though if you want to masturbate
you should still buy it, though.
If you want to masturbate to it, then go for you. I'm open to anything.
Your fabulous book aside, and I know, did you read Three Women?
No, I didn't. What's that?
It's the stories of three different women, and it's almost like reading something like In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. She's a journalist.
I like that one.
It's that kind of very, almost like, documentary style storytelling. But it's really all about female desire and yearning and how it gets shut down. Some people have said it's the bleakest thing they've ever read and they feel like it was supposed to be sexy. But
oh my god, I really want to read this as well. This sounds great.
I think
great.
It's really interesting. I think you'd be,
I basically love reading about other people's sex lives, so I'm all for it.
Have you read any good sort of sexy memoirs like that? Or I'm trying to think what there are. And I really like the Belle de Jour books. I thought they were great, although I'm not sure how they stand up in 2019. I've not read them for a while.
Was that turned into a television series with Billy Piper in it? I watched the TV series, which I also loved, but haven't seen since I was like 16.
It was a tricky, and it's a really, really, really complicated conversation about sex work. And I feel very differently about it now than I did when I watched it, because, she's so beautiful and it all looks so fantastic and glamorous. Like, who wouldn't want to do this for their job? Which I think there are issues there.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, I think that lots of sex workers do like their jobs and are really happy. And the main narrative you see in the media is of them getting murdered in CSI. Mm. I love CSI. But it's nice to have another... You need both sides of every story, basically. And like, maybe Belle de Jour was a very idealistic view. But lots of other books are idealistic about other things. And we're not like... You're glamorising marriage. It's never that easy, Cinderella,
Glamorised dragons. They even exist. Exactly. That is a really, really good point. And I suppose that she does have a voice and autonomy. And, she's not tragic or marginalised. Oh, did you read The Hunger Games?
Yeah, absolutely loved The Hunger Games. Can't wait for the new one.
I love those books.
Now, I read all three in 3 days.
That's intense.
Much better than Game of Thrones, which took me a year.
Was that when they came out? Because I used to work for a magazine where it was a teen mag and I edited the books page. And I just remember how huge those books were. And it's like Twilight left me cold, but I was like, oh yes, this is for me.
Yeah, Twilight I also didn't get on with, but really loved The Hunger Games. That's the first time I remember. I think maybe we weren't like near the end of my kindling. Because I remember being like, shit, I finished the first one. And then being like, you can download it instantly. It's amazing.
Oh, is that your ABBA annual?
Yeah, that's my ABBA annual.
I love ABBA. I really love ABBA.
I love ABBA.
Let's get the ABBA annual. The ABBA annual, 1979. Oh, this is fabulous. The picture on the front is ABBA all with a horse.
Yeah, my editor for my book actually got this as a present because she found out how much I love ABBA.
When did you... fall in love with ABBA?
When didn't I fall in love with ABBA? I'm a huge Mamma Mia fan. I'm a huge Mamma Mia Here We Go Again fan. I love ABBA and everything about them and every single song they've ever written.
But when did they come into your life? Was it Mamma Mia time or before?
I can't remember ABBA ever not being in my life. They're like, their music is like, it's so fun. It's always everywhere. Everyone has always listened to Dancing Queen at every wedding they've ever been to.
I think I have a very, very clear memory of, I think I would have been about 4 and my dad putting a record on and it was like, I think, you'll like this. And it was Vu Vu. And that was when I was like, those are my guys. And being like a directioner for ABBA.
Yeah.
But and also being quite surprised and bewildered by the fact that my, you know, I was going to say my friends at school. What friends? The kids at school. They didn't like ABBA. They thought that this was another reason to mock me.
I bet they like them now.
I mean, who doesn't? What's not? I love that this begins with fun facts. So, this is ABBA. Agnetha is an Aries born on April the 5th, 1950, and the youngest member of ABBA. Her life has always been full of funny incidents, the first being her stage debut at the age of 5 when her pants fell down when she was singing. This is very much the sort of thing that I'd have to do at Bliss.
What write these things?
Tell me an embarrassing thing that happened. I fell off the stage. Can it be something else? Bjorn is the oldest member of ABBA. He's a Taurus, born on April 25th, 1945.
Of course he's a Taurus.
Do you have a favourite member and song? Or is that like asking you to pick a favourite child?
I don't have a favourite ABBA member. I think you need all four of them to complete the ABBA quadrant.
Ab or bab or bar.
Exactly. My favourite ABBA song is probably The Winner Takes It All.
Which is a devastating song.
Yeah, a real heart wrencher, but I do love it. I also really like The Night Before You Came. Love a story song. Basically, I love an ABBA ballad.
They do the best ballads. Did you do the completed crossword?
No, when that... I got this book, the crossword was already completed.
That was what
completed.
Was happening the day before you came to the ABBA annual.
Yeah, I was doing the word search and crossword without me.
Huge thanks to Flo. Follow her at Flo Perry Draws on Instagram and at Flo Perry on Twitter. And rush out and buy How to Have Feminist Sex. It really is life-enhancing. I'm Daisy Buchanan, and I've been your book inspector. Thank you so much for joining me, fellow spinebenders. You can find me on Twitter at NotRollerGirl and on Instagram at TheDaisyBee. Say hello, suggest some guests, and watch out for shelfies. Visit our show page, acast.com/booked, for more information about our guests and a list of the books they've talked about. If you've got any other queries about the podcast, you can email us at whybooked@gmail.com. Your Booked is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast. Please do subscribe, rate us and leave a review. It's great to hear what you think and it helps other people to find the podcast. And on the subject of reviews, I'm going to leave you with a 1-star Amazon review of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Well, first of all, the whole thing is almost all dialogue.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.